This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's with all this Greenland, Panama Canal talk from Trump renaming the Gulf of Mexico? We'll talk about that tonight. Plus, we have some guests. We'll see if any of them have anything to say. All that coming up on I'm Right. Okay, before we get to all the Greenland renaming the Gulf of Mexico, Panama Canal talk, let's talk about these wildfires in California here briefly. First, we're going to give it a day to breathe. You have to excuse the pun on that. I wish I'd put that differently. We're going to give it a day, give the story a day, give these fires a day to breathe so we can track down accurate information. We will tackle it tomorrow in depth on the show. It felt like pouncing on a terrible tragedy to dig into it now. Now is a time to pray, to help people if you're around there and you're in any way able to help people. This is a time where people's homes are still on fire, people are missing. It's wildfires are horrifying things. I grew up in Montana and just they were happening all around. I was always fine, but they're always part of life there. And when they went tearing through, it just moved so fast. And putting them out is dangerous. You can think you're safe and then you're not. It's just pray. Just say a prayer. People are going through terrible things, and we will tackle all the failures and facts and all those other things tomorrow. It's time to say a prayer, all right? Now, I wanted to talk about something else because there's something else all over the news, and it's going to remain all over the news. Donald Trump, every now and then, look, we're used to Donald Trump throwing out something, dropping a bomb on social media, calling somebody horse face or something like that. That's how Donald Trump does things. It's who he is. It's how he does things. But Donald Trump has been saying things recently, and it's not a one-off. It's not a 1 a.m., ah, ha, ha, look at her, she's ugly. No. Donald Trump has been out there talking about doing big things, radical things, crazy things. I guess it depends on your perspective. He's out there talking about renaming the Gulf of Mexico.
We're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, which has a beautiful ring that covers a lot of territory. The Gulf of America, what a beautiful name. And it's appropriate. It's appropriate.
Okay. He's out there talking about the Panama Canal. This is not a one-off. He's brought it up several times. Here he is.
Can you assure the world that as you try to get control of these areas, you are not going to use military or economic coercion?
No. I can say this. We need them for economic security. The Panama Canal was built for our military. I'm not going to commit to that now. It might be that you'll have to do something. Look, the Panama Canal is vital to our country. It's being operated by China. China. And we gave the Panama Canal to Panama. We didn't give it to China. And they've abused it. They've abused that gift. It should have never been made, by the way. Giving the Panama Canal is why Jimmy Carter lost the election, in my opinion, more so maybe than the hostages. The hostages were a big deal.
Okay. He's not stopped there. Greenland is something he brought up during his first term. Now, before the election, after the election, he continues to bring up America taking possession of Greenland. Just so you know, in case you don't, most people already know this, Greenland is a block of ice. It's not green at all. It's a block of ice. It's like 50,000 people that live there. But it is in an incredibly important strategic location, and Trump is on this thing.
Well, we need Greenland for national security purposes. I've been told that for a long time, long before I even ran. I mean, people have been talking about it for a long time. You have approximately 45,000 people there. People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security. That's for the free world. I'm talking about protecting the free world. You look at, you don't even need binoculars. You look outside, you have China ships all over the place. You have Russian ships all over the place. We're not letting that happen.
Okay. So let me explain, because a lot of people get caught in the weeds and there's so much noise out there. It's very, very difficult to make sense of what's going on, why it's going on. So let's stop with the screaming and yelling. Let's stop with the criticizing. Let's stop with the pom-pom waving. Let's stop with all this childish ridiculousness and discuss exactly why Donald Trump continues to say these things, because there are two gigantic reasons why he's doing them. First and foremost, and this is one of the biggest reasons, really you could probably split the two, but the first of the reasons is this. Negotiation. When you have any kind of a negotiation in your life, whether it be personal, business, political, whatever it is so, so important to stake out a position that is extreme to begin with. If it's in the business world, let's say it's in the business world and I'm about to have a negotiation with somebody and I want him to pay me $1 million for my business, okay? He wants to buy Jesse Kelly Burgers and I want him to pay me $1 million. And I walk in and sit down. What I do not ever, if I think it's gonna be a negotiation, is sit down at the table and say, I want $1 million. Why? Because $1 million is my starting position. He's going to negotiate from there. He's gonna say, no, I'll give you $50,000. And I try to counter with, no, I want $750,000. And you see on and it goes. Wherever we end up from there, what I am not going to get is $1 million, because I walked in and staked out a position that put me in a weak position immediately. And Donald Trump has been negotiating deals foreign and domestically forever. He wrote a book on it, The Art of the Deal. Donald Trump understands negotiations. Whether you love Donald Trump or hate Donald Trump, that's what he does. He does it very, very well. So if I want $1 million for Jesse Kelly Burgers, I don't walk in and ask for $1 million. I walk in and ask for $10 million, and then the negotiations begin. And if I stake out that position initially, well, my chances of actually walking away with $1 million increase dramatically. You understand? Right now, we have things going on in the world. Let's talk about the Gulf of Mexico. We're going to rename it the Gulf of America. Why even tackle that? Why even bother with that? Well, I'll get to the second reason in a moment. But for the first reason's purposes, do you know what Donald Trump wants to do, has promised to do, demands? He demands that he's going to deport people en masse. And Mexico just elected a communist woman as president. You've probably already seen her in the news if you pay attention at all. And of course you do, because you watch I'm Right every night, of course, Monday through Friday. And she's already trying to push back. No, we're not going to do this. No, we're not going to do this. No, we're not going to do that. Why would Donald Trump get up at a press conference and say, Gulf of Mexico, that's the Gulf of America, baby? It's a negotiating position. He's staking out a position. Why would you walk in and tell Canada they're going to be the 51st state? Why would you do such a thing? Well, he's going to demand Canada lower some fees for us, lower some tariffs for us, treat us fairly. So what do? You take some crazy sounding position, like we're gonna make Canada the 51st state, putting yourself in a good negotiating position to go from there when it comes to Canada. I mean, at least he announced he's not gonna be sending in the military.
I'm also considering military force to annex and acquire Canada.
No, economic force. Because Canada and the United States, That would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line, and you take a look at what that looks like, and it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada. But here's the problem with Canada. So many friends up there. I love the Canadian people. They're great. But we're spending hundreds of billions a year to protect it. We're spending hundreds of billions a year to take care of Canada. So why are we losing $200 billion a year and more to protect Canada?
It's a negotiating position. Now, that's the first reason. The second reason is this, and this is maybe something you have a hard time understanding. I have a hard time understanding. People want to leave something behind. They want to leave a legacy of some kind. They just do. You know, my father just died recently. And you start going through his stuff and you start looking at what he left behind. He last time he came down, in fact, the last time I saw him when he came down to visit us here, my dad always loved hunting knives. He loves hunting. He was a big outdoorsman. He brought my sons, James and Luke, two of his best hunting knives, and he gave it to the boys. Passing something along, a legacy, leaving something behind. For me, because I'm not a general, a politician, a world leader. I live the kind of life you live for the most part. It's caused me to start looking at what am I going to leave behind? What am I going to leave for my boys? What kind of boys am I going to leave behind? What am I going to leave them? Should I get them a nice watch? This is how people like you and I think. But people like Donald Trump, Alexander the Great, and I realize I'm not comparing the two, but big, important people like that, world leaders, generals, conquerors, they want to do the same thing, just on a much grander scale. Donald Trump has already been president for 4 years. He's already a billionaire. He's already the most famous person on the planet. He has another 4 years. He's 70-some years old. He doesn't have forever left on this planet. I realize he's in good health, and I'm glad he is, but Donald Trump has his name on hotels and golf courses around the planet. That's how this human being thinks. Donald Trump intends to do big things. Some of these big things you may love. Maybe you'll love all of them. Some of these big things you may hate, or you think you're crazy. Why are we buying Greenland? Big things and people who want to do big things are almost always called crazy. You can think he's crazy or not. I don't care. I'm not here to wave pom-poms for the man. But when you think about buying Greenland, and he's dead serious about that, I should note. He already sent his son over there. He's dead serious about it. He's talked about it forever. It sounds crazy when you, maybe we've lived in a 50-state United States of America for the longest time. What are we getting? We're just going to add a country. We can't do that. It belongs to Denmark. We don't think like that. I don't think like that. If you had asked me the last year, it would never occur to me to take a big block of ice up there by the UK. I don't give a crap about Greenland. But Donald Trump, guys like that, think like that. He's dead serious. He wants to take back the Panama Canal. No, it's ours now. Dead serious about Greenland. No, it's mine now. That's how people like that think. He intends to do gigantic things with his last 4 years as president and leave something lasting behind. That's how guys like that, that's how their mind works. You can love it, you can hate it, you can relate to it or not, but that's how their mind works, all right? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Pure talk. They'll help you leave something behind because you can leave AT&T behind and T-Mobile behind and Verizon behind because they suck. Those big mobile companies are garbage. They support the worst, most despicable causes in the world. I'll tell you what, whoever your cell phone provider is, whoever it is, I want you to do something for me. I want you to pick up your phone or go to the computer right now, and I want you to look up the name of that company and ESG, diversity and inclusion. Go look that up. Look at what you support with your money. PureTalk doesn't do that garbage. PureTalk's CEO is a Vietnam veteran. Two tours. Pure Talk costs me half of what T-Mobile used to cost me, and I don't sacrifice coverage on the same 5G network as the others. Switch, it's easy. You keep your phone, keep your number, or you get a new phone if you want. They have all the newest stuff. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. You know what I love? Cutting the government. So I've never had it in my life. It's not like it's something I've ever experienced in my 43 years on the planet, but maybe, just maybe, I don't know, we might get some sort of cuts out there. At least somebody's trying. Lauren Boebert's trying. Joining me now, Congresswoman from the great state of Colorado, a state which the commies are destroying, Lauren Boebert. Okay, Lauren, you have a bill out there to abolish the ATF, which is music to my ears. That sounds like a good start. The question is, where's it going from here?
Yes, well, Congressman Eric Burleson and I have this bill to abolish the ATF because we know for far too long that rogue partisan bureaucrats at the ATF have absolutely run amok. They've been infringing and trampling on our Second Amendment rights. Anyone who remembers Project Gunrunner and Operation Fast and Furious, they know exactly how rogue this agency is and has the potential to be in the future. The fact that the ATF allowed thousands of guns to end up in the hands of Mexican cartels and criminal organization and lost thousands of those guns, and that one of these guns was actually able to be used to kill a Border Patrol agent, Brian Terry, all through the same brilliant government program, is absolutely outrageous. And this is just one of the reasons why the ATF needs to be defunded and abolished. We can put this kind of agency in the hands of our local sheriffs, who do a much better job keeping their communities safe than federal agents ever could. And this is one way to just reduce the size and scope of government, get rid of some of these militant parts of our federal agency. And come on, Jesse, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, we all know that this should be the name of a gas station, not a federal agency.
You're here. Now, the question is, with this slim majority and the gigantic bunch of weenies we have in the GOP and House, is this something we can get done? What can we get done with this Congress? You'll have to forgive me if I'm not extremely hopeful.
Hey, I understand your pessimism here. I get it. We had a majority with President Trump before. A lot of the things that he wanted to get done were actually blocked in the Senate and not in the House. And the House had a much larger majority then. Right now we have a very slim majority. And we know the history of a lot of these folks that I serve here in Congress with. But hopefully they'll look at things like Fast and Furious and question where the records went to that were in question, that a judge found were not covered by privilege, and that they were supposed to be released to the American people. But then Nancy Pelosi and Democrats ended the House lawsuit when they took control in 2019 and further buried the scandal. And it's absolutely shameful. So hopefully I could get my colleagues to look back on dangerous programs that the ATF has been involved in, and maybe come alongside of us and shut this down. But we also have Pete Hegseth, we have Kash Patel, and hopefully these will be strong voices in this pursuit to reduce government, to limit government, and really get rid of unnecessary agencies. Spending is going to be one of our top issues in this Congress. Of course, we need to release American energy and become energy dominant so we can begin to lower inflation. But this, there has to be spending cuts as well. And this is a great way to begin to save money right here in the beginning of the Congress by eliminating this agency. And I hope we can eliminate many others. There's already been talk of eliminating the Department of Education, which is completely unconstitutional. And we should be giving that power back to the states rather, and even more so the school districts rather than the federal government.
Lauren, let's talk about Colorado because it's a state I absolutely adore. I've been there so many times. I just spent a lot of time there growing up in the Rocky Mountains myself. people are constantly stunned because they view it as, you know, a Western cowboy, freedom-loving state. They see people like you from there at the left-wing lurch of that state. Democrats almost have a supermajority in the state house there. How did that happen? What's going on in Colorado?
Well, in Colorado, you can look back to universal voting, the universal mail-in ballots. That's really when we started to go blue. Of course, it paired with that was the legalization of marijuana. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe that started inviting Californians at the time who brought with them their policies. Hopefully those who were coming for that reason weren't coming there to vote, but maybe. But really, we saw Democrats start to get involved financially at very local levels. They're on just about every board you can imagine, whether it's a water board, an electric board, or a school board. And then also, they were starting to spend money in these House, Senate, state House and Senate races and begin to flip our state legislature, and they did so successfully. Now, this year in Colorado, we were able to flip some of those Democrat seats, avoiding the supermajority by the Democrats, but it wasn't enough. We still need to be persistent, and our GOP needs to come together as well. There are many fractured areas in that, and I'm hoping as the most senior Republican in the congressional delegation that I can help bring some unity and common sense. I have a record of working with the other side without compromising my principles, and it's very possible to keep a conservative voting record and a conservative platform and still deliver for the people that you represent. I've brought our Democrat senators on board to pass legislation for water storage projects, and even job creation. So this is possible, but we have got to stop the bickering within. And if you're not going to be on our team, then don't be on our team. Don't come in and say that you're Republican and then vote with Democrats or support Democrats. That's what's really happening to Colorado. But in 2 years, we have a gubernatorial race and another Senate race. So maybe if these 2 years are successful, as they should be, at a federal level, that would create enough momentum to begin to gain ground again in Colorado.
Lauren, speaking of our team, pretty much every person in the GOP just about voted for Mike Johnson. He's now the Speaker of the House. Here you were.
Boebert.
Let us down, Mr. Speaker, Mike Johnson.
Johnson.
Don't let me down. I enjoyed it. What are we expecting from Mike Johnson 2.0? Because 1.0 was not something I want to see again.
Yes. Well, first of all, I do not envy his position and his first term as Speaker. He was thrust into this, and I may or may not have had something to do with that. We were running out of options, and I nominated Mike Johnson as Speaker. Now, he is a really great man. And I know that he did try. He has brought a lot of people to the table for discussions on policy. Now, I was disappointed with a lot of it because we would come to an agreement within the Republican Party where the Freedom Caucus and the Ukraine Caucus would agree on legislation moving forward. And then the meeting would disperse and maybe staff got involved and an even worse deal would come to the floor, which was extremely frustrating. But now with President Trump, rightfully back in the White House, soon to be anyway, I believe that we will have the right leadership for Mike Johnson to lean on. And I really do hope that this will be one of the most successful speakerships and House Congresses in history. That would be wonderful. We know that we have some folks who resist our Republican agenda at times, but we have a mandate and we have to deliver on that. And it's President Trump's policies that we have to deliver on. I didn't want to have a drawn out speaker's race, knowing that President Trump needed his electoral college certificates certified. And of course the inauguration coming up. So this is what we did to get it done. And I hope that Mike Johnson will be a stronger speaker in this Congress than the last.
Appreciate you. Come back soon. All right, let's talk about sleeping at night. Because when I think about Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House, I have trouble sleeping at night. What do you do? You're laying there, you're thinking, wow, I hope the GOP can do something. But wow, that worthless weenie Mike Johnson's the Speaker of the House. Now I'm never going to sleep again. That's when you reach for some dream powder from Beam. You see, Beam, it's healthy. It's natural, you see. It's a cup of hot chocolate, but it's got melatonin and things like that in it. I know there are a million things that will help you sleep. They all make you feel like garbage when you wake up the next day. But not dream powder from Beam. Even with Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House, you can sleep like a baby with one cup of hot chocolate. How good does that sound? Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly. Get up to 40% off. We'll be back. What about the United States Senate? What can we expect from them? Well, the first bill looks like they're going to take up is this Laken Riley bill. And I can't believe I'm about to say these words, but it looks like it's going to have some Democrat support. What is happening in the year 2025? Joining me now to talk about that and other things, great senator from the state of Tennessee, Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator, okay, this Laken Riley Act, what is it and how in the world are you getting Democrats to vote for it?
And this is one of the border control bills. People are so tired of illegal aliens committing crimes. And the Laken Riley Act is specific to deportation of these criminal illegal aliens that are committing these sexual assaults and being able to move them immediately to deportation.
Senator, honestly, I'm thrilled this is a bill. I'm thrilled it's a bill that looks like it's going to pass, but I'm a little taken aback that we needed a new bill to deport any illegal immigrant, let alone sexual predators. Why do we need a new bill?
And, you know, Jesse, we have had for years the 287G program that has been on the books. This is through the Department of Justice. And our local law enforcement, state enforcement, can actually apprehend and then call on ICE to deport criminal illegal aliens. And for years, I've had a bill, the CLEAR Act, that would codify that and would add to it removing from these sanctuary cities the ability to get federal law enforcement funds if they're not going to stand by and follow the law.
Senator, okay, so that takes care of part of illegal immigration. What about the rest of it? We're told there's going to be mass deportations. We're told that, all these things sound great, and I'm all on board for all of them. Do we need new laws? Are the laws already in place and we're good to go? Is Congress going to somehow obstruct these things? Where are we at on all that? Because that's very much what the American people voted for.
You're so right about that. And there is so much that President Trump can do day one by using existing law. We can return to building the wall. We can reinstate, President Trump can reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy. We'll make certain that we're going to be able to look at the asylum laws and make certain that people that are claiming asylum are going to a port of entry or they're going to the embassy there in their home country in order to claim that asylum and try to come here. So laws are on the books. They need to be enforced.
Senator, what else is the Senate going to do? We have a slim majority in the House, actually a little bit better in my mind in the Senate. Should we anticipate good bills being passed? I'm really cringing when I say that because it's hard to find a good bill. Yeah. Are there good ones, though?
You know what, Jesse? Why don't we do this? Why don't we focus on putting the federal government into a posture where it actually does more with less, where it responds to the needs of the American people, and that the laws on the books, we review these, and then all of the work that is being done by the agencies, let's put every agency through the DOGE process and see exactly what we need. And as we go through that, We can freeze federal hiring. We can freeze federal salaries. We can, through attrition, do a lot of reduction in the federal workforce. Part of my DOGE acts is across-the-board spending cuts. So let's return to the 2019 pre-pandemic spending levels, and from there do 1, 2, or 5% across the board spending cuts. Let's make certain that employees who are getting a promotion are getting that promotion on merit. Let's have a return to work policy that federal employees have to show up and do their job. Right now, only about 10% of the federal workforce is working in person full time, and only 12% of federal office space is being occupied.
Good grief. Well, praise God we at least have one senator who wants to cut spending. How does this work with DOGE? Obviously, it's easy for people who aren't in the Senate, aren't in the House to talk about it. We've got Vivek, we have Elon Musk. Sounds like they want to do great things. I'm applauding them for it, but they don't have any actual power, right? How does this work?
That's right. They're going to bring forward ideas, and people in Congress have a lot of good ideas too. Ways that we can reduce what the federal government is spending in different departments, whether it's the IRS, and removing extra agents that are needed, making certain that when it comes to health and human services, that services and benefits are going to people who actually qualify, making certain that in every agency we're rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse. And we will do this through government oversight, through the budget process, through the appropriations process. And I'm really looking forward to people bringing ideas to me. I can't tell you the number of people that have said, Marcia, we know you're going to be working on DOGE. Here's an idea for you. And we need people to contact us. They can find me on social media at Marcia Blackburn. They can go to our website, blackburn.senate.gov. And if they know of a place where there is waste, fraud, abuse of the federal taxpayer dollar, they need to be weighing in and giving us that information.
Senator, let's move on and talk about what you've got going with Christopher Wray and the FBI and the DEI hiring policies. I can't believe the federal law enforcement arm, they even do it too. What's going on?
I wrote a letter to Director Wray after the attacks in New Orleans. You know, Jesse, what we need to do is find out how they could have missed so many clues. When you look at this individual who had been in the military, who was being radicalized, who had made these trips abroad, who had affiliated with this mosque, you look at the fact that social media had allowed these videos up and did not take them down until after the attack. Looking at what is happening with the FBI, and hopefully they're spending their time chasing bad guys and not spending their time going after parents that show up at PTA meetings or agents out counting the number of Swifty bracelets that they have acquired. They need to be focusing on crime and keeping this country safe. We've got a lot of good men and women in the FBI that are in these field offices, but getting their attention off on DEI and looking at that instead of looking at keeping Americans safe, we need to recenter them on their mission. Kash Patel will do that.
Is Kash Patel, to your mind, maybe you haven't tallied up all the votes yet, is he going to have the votes to get confirmed?
I think he will.
What about Pete Hegseth? John Thune went on television, said he sounded confident to me. Hopefully we can get him through too.
I think so. Pam Bondi at DOJ, she'll get through. Tulsi Gabbard, she's going to get through. Linda McMahon over at Department of Education, who's going to do a good bit of restructuring and recentering over there. She's going to get through. Everyone I've met with, RFK Jr., they're all going to get through.
Well, that is outstanding news. Senator, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. We'll keep going. Hang on. Well, I was gone for the holidays. Christmas time, took a little vacation with the family, so I missed the news cycle to address it with you, which is near and dear to my heart, and that is the topic of immigration, both legal and illegal. You see, immigration does not suddenly become magical and wonderful just because some scumbag politician or his CEO benefactor decides to make it legal. Mass importation of people from across the planet has watered down and broken this country, and that's just the way that is. Anyway, I want to hear what Arn McIntyre has to say about it, since I never addressed it with you. Joining me now, my friend, author of the book The Total State, Arn McIntyre. All right, Arn, apparently the strain of the love of immigration from all over the planet still runs pretty strong in the GOP. Sadly, I don't know that that's going to change anytime soon.
Well, the good news is we're seeing a shift in the discussion, right? Before, it was illegal immigration, and no one was willing to tackle the problem. Now, Trump has won with a mandate on illegal immigration and ending it. And so that doesn't even seem to be up for discussion anymore. I hope he follows through. I hope he makes good on all of those promises. But now we've shifted to a much more difficult topic, which is legal immigration. And some of the people who joined the Republican coalition, like Elon Musk, while they favored crackdowns on illegal immigration, used the H-1B visa program to bring in a large amount of tech workers at low pay in order to run his companies. And he's far from the only CEO to abuse the policy in that way. And so they want to continue to have that option open, even though they're for ending the illegal immigration that the rest of the Trump coalition opposed. But that's not what Trump voters wanted. They wanted a reduction of immigration across the board, both illegal and legal. They don't see any reason why good middle-class jobs should be given to people who aren't in this country, while there are plenty of Americans who want this. The whole thing we always heard about immigration is these are jobs Americans won't do. Well, guess what? These are jobs that Americans want to do. But instead, these people are looking to hire outside the United States to keep wages low.
Arn, why is this not something that was always the case in the United States of America? And I'm aware we have always had legal immigration of some kind, but why do we have to fight against this now, even within our own party, when we didn't have to do this as much back in the day? Is it a lack of patriotism? Is America just a profit loss sheet now? I don't understand.
Well, Elon Musk likened America to a sports team, but the problem with the sports team analogy is most people hate this aspect of sports now, right? That it's so mercenary, that the teams and the players are in no way loyal to the people that actually support them. That's not a great model for my country. I don't want a government that sees me as some kind of interchangeable widget that they can bring in and bring out whenever they find someone else who plays the position better. We want a government that cares about the people of the United States. But so many in the Republican Party have bought into the idea that we have to have immigrants to make the economy run, that we are a nation of immigrants. No, we are a nation of Americans. And those who would like to come and become part of that have been given the opportunity graciously by the American people from time to time. But that doesn't mean that there's some blanket open door policy where anyone who happens to be slightly better at computer programming and does a little bit cheaper can come in and make sure that they get the American dream instead of the people who actually live here.
Okay, let's go across the pond for a few and talk about the UK. Now, anyone who's been paying attention, people like you, people who watch your show, that they've been aware of the Muslim rape gangs in the UK for quite some time, but most normies and normas have found this out in about the last 15 minutes. So, doing the best you can, would you explain how in the world a bunch of barbarians got into the UK and began mass raping British girls?
Yeah, the sad news is, like you said, this has been going on for well over a decade. the UK government was aware that large grooming gangs were operating inside the country, mostly made up of Pakistani Muslim immigrants. And because of the immigrant community that was central to this operation, they turned a blind eye. Police regularly ignored what was going on. Sometimes they would arrest the girls who were being abused and not the abusers themselves. And the excuse was always multiculturalism. We don't want to expose this community to racism and hatred. If people found out what was actually happening, then they might be angry at Muslims and not want them in their country. Well, Elon Musk has, you know, to his credit now on the other side of this, has been tweeting repeatedly about this after new evidence came out, after someone who was at a trial, they actually read out the transcript of what was done during this. And it was so gross, so horrific, that it outraged Musk, and he started sharing this far and wide. And so now, like you said, the average person is suddenly discovering this. And this is why there were riots in the UK after a knife attack from an immigrant, because this is a long history of abuses. It didn't just start with that one attack. There have been a long history of abuses by the British government of its people, of its citizens, under the name of multiculturalism, and they are fed up with it, and that's why there's all this heat all of a sudden.
Do you see any similarities between what's happening there and what's happening here?
Oh, of course. We know that in the United States, after the BLM riots, we got what we call the Ferguson effect, right? Black communities were less policed because so many people in the United States were terrified of being called racist. Nobody wanted to be the next Derek Chauvin. Nobody wanted to have their career railroaded because they arrested the wrong guy or got caught on video, you know, being rough with a suspect. And so these neighborhoods simply were not policed. And what we saw was that crime went up, traffic accidents went up, more Black people actually died because of the BLM movement, because we were unwilling to police a community because it might be racist, because it might look bad on television. And of course, that is what the UK is experiencing. They refused to police a community. They refused to expose what was happening in that community because they were too scared of the racial backlash. And so they simply allowed the mass rape of young British women for over a decade and just continued to do nothing in the face of the obvious evidence that was going on.
Aaron, I've got a problem with how we do presidential transitions now. Obviously, it hasn't been a problem in the past, but of course we have one very weak, very stupid party that would be the GOP, and one party completely evil trying to burn the country down, and they've put their foot on the gas during this transition period between the election and when Donald Trump actually gets sworn in. Do we need to shrink that period of time? How in the world can we survive when we have 3 months of just no brakes, all gas, burn it all?
Yeah, I actually tried to explain this scenario to a British friend of mine, and he thought that it was absolutely insane. Like, you mean you win an election, but you're not in power, and the guy who lost gets to do whatever he wants, consequence-free, for months? And it's particularly annoying because transitioning from who? We know that Joe Biden is not in charge of the White House. So who's actually transferring power to Donald Trump in this entire process? We don't actually know. And in the meantime, like you said, they're burning down the country as fast as they can.
Aaron, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood, and before we lighten the mood, I need to remind you, go subscribe to the YouTube channel. I put things on there that you're not going to get here, plus little clips, things like that, things you might enjoy. Go to youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC. Just pick up your phone and scan that little thing right there on the screen. Now, we all need a little joy in our lives. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.